Welcome back to Cherish Nature's Gift, the podcast season 2, where we discuss and celebrate all things parenthood. From the ups and downs of breastfeeding, the unspoken fourth trimester of parenthood, planning for your next baby, and preparing as baby enters toddlerhood, we're here to journey with you.
Join us as we unpack the many facets of parenthood with our panel experts and Haygen moms as they share their own parenthood journey with us.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Cherish Nature's Gift, the podcast season 2. I'm Valen, and here with me is Joyce.
Hi everyone, I'm Joyce, I'm a mother of two, and I'm part of the team here at Haygen Lactation Center.
And today, we've invited a very special guest, an expert in her field of expertise, Dr. Jessica, to join us today. Dr. Jessica, could you share with our audience a little bit more about yourself?
As they have introduced, I'm Dr. Jessica. I'm a dentist. I'm at Roy's Dental Pediatrics Clinic that's at Carlton 112. So I'm a kids dentist. So I only see children and from newborn onwards all the way till could be 18, could be 21, depends on whether they are special needs or not. I'm a mom of two myself. So I have a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and yeah, I really enjoy motherhood. So I say that, like, you know, my first job is really being a mother and my second job is being a kids dentist. And I think being a mom has really helped me be a better kids dentist as well. So hopefully that expertise, I can tie both being a mom and being a dentist together, and I can make this podcast a really good one for everyone today.
That's nice. So with Dr. Jessica here with us today, if you haven't guessed it already, we'll be talking all things related to dental, oral development of your growing babies. Specifically on the topic of weaning, so we can all win at weaning. Now let's dive straight into today's episode. So Joyce, what is weaning?
I think weaning is the stage where you introduce your baby to solid foods alongside the usual breast milk or infant formula to go with it.
But before weaning happens, so our first question of the day, also a very common question parents always ask, Dr. Jessica, when should we start introducing solid foods to babies?
So we do have to look at whether your baby is ready for solids or not. I mean, there's no like fixed age. Like you don't say like, oh, my kid has turned 6 months old, so let's start solids today. You really have to see. It's really very child dependent. Depends on whether your child can sit upright, whether they've got good neck support, they are able to sit unsupported, whether they have good, you know, hand to mouth coordination, so they can bring something to their mouth by themselves. We also need to check whether they are interested in food. So some children, they develop the like an interest in food slightly later, some slightly earlier. So it really depends, but in general, it's roughly around 6 months old. It could be a little earlier, could be a little later. But just like, it's still a fairly narrow range, and we don't want to start too early, neither do we want to start too far off from 6 months old.
Starting solids is such an exciting time for families. I think it's just nice when, you know, our babies can join us at the table and everyone just, you know, have a meal together. It's definitely a time parents look forward to, but we also heard of babies who struggle to accept solids and they prefer milk instead. So in such cases, what is the impact on oral development if the baby prefers milk over solids?
So I mean, for oral development wise, one of the things why we wean is also because we want to introduce the child learning how to bite stuff and accepting different textures in their mouth apart from just like really just swallowing, because with milk, be it formula milk, be it breast milk, they really don't have to chew at all. It's really just swallowing, swallowing, swallowing. So there comes a certain point where they need to be exposed to different textures, chunkier textures as well, so that they can learn how to chew with their teeth, even without teeth. I mean, with just their gum pads. The gum pads are very strong and they can actually use their gum pads itself to just kind of munch on food. They don't develop like the ability to chew very well. And the later they are introduced to chewing, the less time they have to develop chewing. And if you kind of miss a good time to start learning chewing, they may be a little bit slower and their chewing may not be as established as if they were to start chewing, learning chewing at the correct time. Mm-hmm. So of course, if you just rely on milk as well, there also comes the factors of how you may be lacking in certain nutrients, because relying on just milk in particular, like for example, if you have just breast milk and you're past 6 months old, you may suffer from a bit of iron deficiency, because that's when the breast milk may not have enough iron for a growing child. So we do need to supplement the breast milk with other food so that we can have enough iron in our diet. Yeah, I would say that, you know, relying solely on milk is not so advisable. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I find that even in the Singapore context, lots of children actually love drinking milk. be it formula milk, be it breast milk. And it's a very vicious cycle, because what I've noticed in my profession is that for kids who love milk, they tend to also have a poorer appetite. They tend to not like solids as much. And that's because they are very reliant on being full and getting their nutrients from milk. So it's like a vicious cycle, because parents are like, oh, you know, my child's a picky eater, they're not eating, so I give them more milk. But because they are giving them more milk, they also get more filled up. And because they get more filled up, they don't eat their solids as well anymore. So it's like, so do you cut the milk and then, you know, parents worry like, oh, my child may starve. Like, my child likes milk so much, so let's just give the child even more milk. And because you do that, the child's like, oh, why do I even eat? Because I don't eat, I still get fat. And I get fat with the thing that I like to drink, which is milk. So I'm just not going to eat. So it kind of propagates the problem, because it's really a vicious cycle. Give more milk, they eat poorer, and if they eat poorer, give even more milk. So I mean, you can't really there's no end to that. So it's good to introduce to them solids at the right time, and also slowly taper off the milk as they grow, so that they are more reliant on solids for their nutrients.
No, that's really good, right? Yeah. I mean, just on that thread, like weaning and eating. So we all know that there are two main schools of thought here with regards to weaning. There's the baby-led weaning, which is very fun, where the babies try to feed themselves.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have the traditional weaning method, right? So would you be able to share more about these two approaches and how they actually affect the oral and speech development in our babies?
Baby-led weaning is a fairly new kind of feeding method. I think it's really kind of gained more traction in recent years. Previously, everybody was all about like traditional feeding. So this is not something I learned in dental school, you know, traditional feeding and baby-led weaning. But for both my kids, for weaning, I did baby-led weaning almost 100%. But I know of people who do a combination of traditional weaning as well as baby-led weaning at the same time. And I mean, I've read certain things about how that could be risky and it could increase the risk of choking, because your child gets a bit confused. Like sometimes I need to chew, sometimes I need to swallow. But actually, research has shown that most people don't do 100% baby-led weaning. Even people who say they do baby-led weaning, probably they do it 80% of the time. 20%, they still do spoon feeding. So in terms of how baby-led weaning versus traditional weaning affects oral development, there's really not much research out there whether it truly affects oral development. But what is known is that even if you're doing traditional weaning, and that means that you're not letting your child feed themselves so much, and you kind of like give them a fixed portion and you try to get them to finish that portion, it is also important to make sure there is progression of textures. I think one common misconception is that when you do traditional feeding, it's always purees, it's always very soft runny food. But that is a misconception, because even with traditional feeding, you can still have chunkier textures, you know, like in Asian context, like you can have porridge and you can have minced meat in it and all that. And by exposing your child to more textures, maybe the first few feeds you want really runny texture because they haven't really learned how to chew at all. But as you see your child start to develop like kind of a chewing action in their mouth, that's when you can slowly kind of expose them to more textures. And by that, you allow them to practice their chewing. And I think if I were to kind of hazard a guess as to whether traditional weaning, baby-led weaning, how does it affect oral development, is probably in terms of chewing. So if you're doing traditional feeding, but yet you're giving your child the opportunity to be exposed to different textures that requires chewing, I don't think there's much difference in terms of oral development. So it's really whichever works best for your family, whether it's traditional or baby-led weaning, because, you know, baby-led weaning can be quite stressful for lots of people.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, it's all mess. Yeah. But I agree with you. It's only becoming a trend these days. Like a lot of young parents has been exploring that method.
Yeah.
And also just following that, out of curiosity, you know, if let's say you start introduce solid foods, do you have to then cut down on your milk, or like how do you portion that out to slowly?
So the interesting thing is that as the child grows, their stomach grows as well. So there is a certain amount of liquids they can take at one feed. You can't like, you know, you can't be giving them like 500 mils of like liquid in a bottle and they just guzzle everything down. I mean, okay, I've heard of some parents who do that. But most of the time, the amount of liquid they can take, probably 200, maybe 300. So you can still maintain your same amount of milk feeds in the same quantity that you used to give. But because now their stomach is bigger, their appetite is bigger, they can in fact eat more. So you can still maintain your milk feeds, but yet they should be able to eat more. If you feel that like, you know, your child's eating eating, your child has a strong preference for milk, really just wants milk and not eat any solids, I would suggest that you slowly reduce the frequency of your milk feeds or just the quantity of milk that you're giving per feed. That also helps. But also it depends on your child as well, because from 6 months to 1 year old, their main source of food is really from the milk. So if, let's say, like from 6 months to 1 year, your child is not really not eating much solids, you shouldn't be cutting the milk so that they will eat more solids, because they're not ready for that yet. You want to wait till maybe past a year old for you to actually cut the milk a little bit and introduce more solids, because from 6 months to 1 year, it's really just a very exploratory stage for them to like master certain biting skills, for them to taste different foods, you know, exposed to different textures. So that's a very exploratory period for babies, and we shouldn't be forcing them to eat, you know, like you know, finish all your porridge, you know. Yeah, we shouldn't be doing that when they are so young, because it's really just an exploratory period.
So it's up to a year, and we shouldn't like limit or constrict.
No, because really every child is really different. I mean, there is a very loose guideline as to when you should actually be really like, yeah, you must be eating 3 solids a day. But I would think that past 1, that's a good age to be more strict about their solids. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, it is so hard to wean my little one off feeding bottle, parents usually say. So what are some tips you can suggest to parents who struggle to get their babies off bottle or breast?
So with all, I would say that I would call it an addiction to the milk bottle is really a habit, and habits do take time to break. Of course, breaking a habit earlier when a child is younger, it's a lot easier. So a good age to wean from the bottle will be about 1.5, around there. That's the recommended. But in Singapore, lots of children use milk bottles. I mean, I'm guilty of using a milk bottle till I was 7. My mom probably didn't know any better. But I used a milk bottle till 7. But now when I hear of other people using a milk bottle 7, because of my profession, I'm like, you really must stop, you know. But last time in the past, like when my friends come over, I'll be like, mom, hide the bottles, you know. I'll just be like, I love my bottle so much. It's a good age to start weaning early on. The later you start, the harder it may be. Of course, you can wait till your child is really big, like 6 or 7, and they become embarrassed. Then that you may want to stop. It probably will be easier to stop then. But with all habits, I would suggest trying or at least introducing the idea of stopping the milk bottle early on. And that means introducing to them like an open cup, introducing to them, you know, like your bottles. Yeah, your cups from an early age, just so that they learn how to drink from that, and they know that there's a different kind of container that can contain your milk. It's not, you don't necessarily only need to drink milk from a milk bottle. You can always drink it from a cup. So introducing this idea early on is important. Another thing that I noticed is that lots of in the local context, a lot of children are very reliant on the milk bottle to fall asleep. So they drink milk just before they go to bed at night. Some of them like kind of drink on it, and then they doze off while the milk bottle is in their mouth. So they are very dependent on the milk bottle to fall asleep, and that's kind of what they use in order to aid with their sleeping. So for a lot of children who have this habit of drinking the milk bottle to fall asleep, you'll realize that they tend to wake up in the middle of the night as well, maybe once or twice in the middle of the night to ask for milk as well. And that's because it's very normal for a child and even for adults to wake up in the middle of the night. But because we are able to fall back asleep unaided, we don't rely on like a milk bottle. But for a child who has been put to sleep with a milk bottle, if they wake up in the middle of the night, they don't know any other way to fall back asleep. So they will go back to the bottle, they ask for milk at night, and that's how they learn how to fall asleep. So after a while, there's a dependency on the milk bottle for these children to fall asleep. And also for the parents, they are like, you know, at night, all parents want to sleep, right? And your child wakes up and the easiest fix is, just give him the bottle, you know, like everybody wants sleep. So that's how the habit kind of persists past 1.5. It goes to 2, 3, 4 years old, and it just continues, you know. So I would say that a lot of night milk drinking, especially the ones in the middle of the night, are really because of habit. So for parents who come to me and they want to stop the milk bottle, I always suggest starting with the middle of the night feed first. So how you wean from the milk bottle is to either go cold turkey entirely. So cold turkey is going to be tough for everybody for a week. So it's going to be tough for the kids. If the kid has siblings, tough for the siblings because the crying will be really loud. Tough for the parents, probably no good sleep for a couple of days as well. But after a week or so, usually the kid kind of gets it. Rather than just crying, I'll go to sleep myself. Yeah, so it does take a while to break a habit. So if you go cold turkey, it's going to be hard. But my next way, apart from going cold turkey, is actually gradual dilution of the milk. And I find that this method works very well. It's a very soft, gentle approach. And it does take a little longer, but at least with less tears and less trauma for everyone. So starting from the middle of the night milk, usually it's about 3, 4 a.m., what you will do is you will first cut down the quantity of the powder. You maintain the amount of liquid that is in the bottle. But for example, if you're giving like, I don't know, like maybe 150 mils, 5 scoops of powder, you will cut down to about like 4.5 scoops. So reduce by half a scoop of powder every week. So that is very gradual. Because kids are very clever. If you reduce it like drastically, they will immediately know and they'll be like, oh, take it back. You know, and they'll continue to cry. So always cut down very gradually. So like half scoop every week or even 2 weeks. As you cut down half until it's totally like bland or even just plain water. And even if it's just plain water, so if it's just plain water, it's fine because there's no damage to the teeth at all because it's just plain water. But eventually your child will need to toilet train as well. And if they're having large quantities of liquid in the middle of the night, just before they see, you realize that toilet training will become more delayed as well, just because they're taking in so much liquids at night. So after you reduce the amount of powder such that it's almost like totally water or just really just entirely water, you will reduce the amount of liquid by 10 mils every week as well. So it's a very, very gradual change. And because the change is so gradual, you realize that it will stretch over a long period of time. So when it stretches over a long period of time, maybe it will take 6 months for you to actually fully drop that milk. And after you've successfully dropped the middle of night milk, the next one you'll work on is the one that they rely on to fall asleep at night. So the same method, reduce the amount of powder, then reduce the amount of water.
But I mean, there were some hiccups as well, especially when they hit the 2 year age where, you know, terrific twos, right? So my firstborn, sorry, started asking for milk in the middle of the night because she was in the toddler bed, so she could climb out and she's like, no, no, mama, I want milk, mama. I'm like, why are you up? So I did try that, actually. I reduced the quantity. I didn't reduce the powder. I reduced the quantity entirely. So from like 120, I went to 90. But she was happy with it. And after a while, she just got the message that, okay, I just told her, mama, I couldn't give you any more milk anymore. So you just go to bed. And I just walk her back. So it took about 2 weeks of everyday happening that day.
Two weeks is pretty good, I would say.
When she got the message and then she let it be. But that was interesting because she never relied on the bottle to sleep, but she had this sudden habit of needing to suckle on the bottle. I think it's just very comfortable and soothing for the kids, especially when they had a big change that time my second born came along. So I think it's just something like, it's like a triggering, like, a memory that they had. Like, oh, I used to let your mama, or, like, the suckling motion is just very comfortable. So perhaps they were looking for that as well. I guess when it comes to really understanding how to wean them off a bottle of the breast in the middle of the night, especially out of habit, it's also very important to understand what their trigger is. Like, what do they associate, like, feeding or suckling or needing to nurse with before we can say, okay, we should, you know, wean you off completely. Because it can be very difficult for the kids, especially when they couldn't understand.
Yeah, you brought up a very good point, because whenever we want to do these kind of changes to their life, you really have to choose when we're doing it. So if you're in the process of a really big change, changing their school or starting school or like moving house, you know, a big change in life, you don't want to overwhelm them with too many things to cope with. So choosing when you want to make these changes is really important as well.
Timing is important.
No, so just in the same vein as what we have spoken about, we know that it is not very ideal for babies to fall asleep on the breast or fall asleep in the bottle because, you know, like sometimes the milk will pool in the mouth. So for these cases, right, because there's milk and sugar, right, what recommendations might you have to help parents keep the baby's oral cavity healthy?
So of course the best way is to not even have the habit of falling asleep by latching or with a milk bottle. And how you can do that, you can actually start from when baby is really, really young. So you can always put in a little break between feeding baby and putting them to bed. And that could be for example, for a newborn. Burping itself is a break between feeding and sleeping. So from a very early stage, you can break this association between feeding and sleeping. And as the child grows up, they will slowly learn. So for example, if they latch to sleep, if they take a milk bottle, brush after you drink the milk. That is is really how you would prevent any cavities from forming, because when there is no milk on your teeth when you fall asleep, that's how you reduce the risk of cavities forming. A lot of times when they latch to sleep or when they drink a milk bottle to sleep, the milk ends up pooling at the upper front teeth, and that's just how they kind of get the squeeze the milk out, be it from the breast or be it from the bottle. The tongue pushes and causes the milk to just pull up at the front. And because at night our saliva is a lot less, and we also lie on our back when we sleep, just because of that, gravity doesn't allow the saliva to come forward and clean the milk off the upper front teeth. So the milk that you drink just before bed ends up pooling at the front, and it stays there for the whole night, and that's how cavities form. Less saliva, you know, everything is very dry, so cavities form much more easily when you drink milk to fall asleep at night. So just brushing, or even just, you know, if you really find it really difficult, your child is reliant falls asleep, just use a cloth to wipe. But of course the main thing is really just to maybe just avoid drinking milk to sleep. Yeah, that's how you would.
So I've got one question on that. When would you recommend parents to start brushing their kids' teeth?
You need to practice oral hygiene as soon as from like day zero, and that means using a cloth to wipe the gums, wipe the tongue when they're newborns. It just helps them to get used to things being in their mouth, so having you know, something cleaning around, that gets them used to the idea and the feeling of something being in their mouth. But once they start having their first tooth, so when you see the first tooth sprouting out, that's when you will need to use a toothbrush. You can't be using a cloth anymore for teeth. You'll need to use a bristled toothbrush. But for gums, for the tongue, you can continue to use a cloth. So usually it's around 6 months old, then you will need to start brushing, because that's usually when the first tooth comes out. But then again, it's also a big range. It could come out as early as 4 months old. It could be as late as a year plus. So as long as the first tooth comes out, you need to use a toothbrush. But oral hygiene should start from birth.
So is there a recommended age for the little ones to visit dentists?
The recommendation is to visit a dentist by 1 year old or within 6 months of the first tooth coming out. That will mean that, for example, if your first tooth comes out at 4 months old, you will need to come to the dentist by 10 months old. So it could be earlier than one. Yeah, it's very young, and a lot of people don't see the need for it because they're like, oh, you know what, it's there to check. So we do see some newborns, and a lot of them come for lip tie, tongue tie issues. So that will be one of my youngest patients, like 3 days old, 4 days old. That will be the youngest patients I see. But the reason why we suggest coming for visits within 6 months of the first tooth coming out or before a year old is because mainly is the visit is more for like a very quick check for the baby, but more for education for the parents. Because a lot of parents do not know what toothpaste. Should I be using any toothpaste? Should I even be brushing? How do you brush? You know, they have no idea how to do it. So it's more of an educational visit for the parents, and it helps to set the child on a good path for good oral hygiene.
So what is the difference between a pediatric dentist and a normal dentist, other than the toys and colourful aesthetics?
A pediatric dentist, mainly, I think the main thing is that we do extra years of education. So we have a master's in pediatric dentistry. It's an extra 3 years of training. And during that 3 years, what we learn is really just all about kids. So how to treat kids' teeth and all, which in the basic dental degree is touched on a little bit, but really not in depth at all. So when we do our master's, that's when we learn a lot more, and even like certain techniques we do not learn in the undergraduate program. So that is what makes a pediatric dentist different from a normal dentist. And also for pediatric dentists, almost all of us exclusively see children, so we don't see adults at all. And because we only see children, we just have a lot more experience, because every single one of our patients are kids, as compared to if you were a general dentist and you see a combination of both adults and kids. I would say that maybe kids only take up maybe 10%, 20% of your patients. Just these reasons, I think a pediatric dentist is has a lot more experience in dealing with children.
Yeah, so on that, what are some of the common dental blind spots that parents should be aware of?
So if your child is a bottle drinker or latches to sleep at night, the really focus on brushing the upper front teeth, because that is where decay usually occurs, is what they call milk bottle decay. So usually on the upper front teeth, so really focus on brushing the area. I think a lot of parents, when they brush, they always miss out on brushing along the gum margins. So they tend to only brush the teeth itself and not where the gum and teeth are touching. So that is a very important place to brush, because that is where we most commonly see cavities start at. So you will need to lift the lip up when you brush the upper front teeth so you can brush along the gum margin. And common areas that we always find a little dirtier are for the upper teeth, upper back teeth near to the cheek and lower back teeth close to the tongue. So these are harder areas to brush just because they are either blocked by the tongue or blocked by the cheek. So you need to be very deliberate in brushing these areas.
I see. I've got one last question. You know, some parents always say when regarding children's teeth, right? It's like, oh, you know, they're milk teeth anyway. They're going to fall off. So why do we need to practice dental hygiene? Why do we need to say, do proper weaning to take care of our children's teeth? They're going to fall off anyway.
Yeah, that's a great question because I get it all the time. So whenever I see a child with cavities, the first thing I usually tell parents is when the tooth will drop. And they are always pretty surprised about when it's going to drop because to a lot of people, they think that it drops very early on in life. Front teeth change between the age of about 6 to 8. So that is not that, I mean, that is pretty young still, I would say. Back teeth change between the age of 10 to 12. So a lot of the children I see, they come to me when some of them are 3, some of them 4. Most of them are around the age preschoolers. So can you imagine if they already have a cavity at their back tooth and they are only 4? The tooth needs to stay in their mouth for about 7 or 8 more years, which is almost double the life that they have just lived. It's a long time more, you know.
That's good perspective.
Yeah, it's a really long time more. And in that 4 years, you had this cavity. And if you don't do anything about it, it's just going to get worse. And in general, prevention is better than cure. So preventing the decay is most important. But if there is decay, spotting it early is super important as well. Because when the cavity is small, the treatment is a lot simpler. You're talking about like just fillings. And even when we do the fillings, just a little bit of drilling. Zzz, 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 and that's it, you know. Rather than, you know, if the hole is huge, it's like zzz. And then, you know, like even for an adult, it could take like, I mean, it takes a lot. Even when I'm on the dental chair myself, I do feel a bit scared. So, you know, for a child, if it's just a little bit, they can tolerate it. And it gives them a much better dental experience. When you come with a huge whooping hole, it's very, it will be potentially traumatic for the child. Because even for an adult, it does take a lot out of us. And a lot of times when parents come to us because, oh, the child is having a toothache, suddenly having a toothache, and that means that the hole is huge. Most of the time, the treatment that we would suggest is either an extraction or root canal treatment. And parents are like, you maybe do that for baby teeth? Like, is it necessary? And I'm like, well, unless you're okay that the child not having a tooth for the next, like, you know, for the, like, 8 years, then sometimes you do have to do a root canal treatment. But even an extraction, your child is not going to have the tooth for the next 8 years. So it's much better to come when there's no cavity. But if there is a cavity, come when it's small. The problem is that unless you're a trained professional, I don't think you'll be able to spot a small cavity. You'll probably only be able to spot a cavity when it's huge because you're not professionally trained. So that's why routine dental treatment and visits are so important because we can prevent it. And if there's anything, we can fix it early.
Thank you.
All right, that wraps up our episode today. Thank you so much, Dr. Jessica, for joining us today and sharing so many valuable tips with us and our mummies.
Yeah, no, thank you so much, Dr. Jessica, for the amazing insights. We hope mummies and daddies listening to this podcast have something to take away today. And to make sure to follow us on social media, on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook.
And don't forget to also hit the subscribe button on Spotify or Apple Podcast and Google Podcast. If you've enjoyed listening to our podcast, do also leave us a review. Once again, I'm Valen.
And I'm Joyce. Thank you for tuning in. See you again soon.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.